record all of my talks, video recording, audio recording, the slides, etc. Not because I'm a huge egotist, but because it seems to me if I'm going to go through all that work to prepare a talk, it'd be nice if people got to see it after. I don't know why more people don't do that. In fact, to me, it's irrational that seasoned academics spend a year preparing their work, they fly to a conference, they present to a room of 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 people, and then the content vanishes into the ether. Makes no sense to me. So I record it. All right. Yeah, I'm gonna run out of time. Okay, so descriptive AI, all kinds of ways we use AI today to figure out what happened. Systems analysis, checking for institutional compliance, all of these things are already in your systems. Your university software is permeated with them, trust me. What kind of thing happened? Audio and video transcription. The Google thing that I, or the audio recorder I use will also produce a transcription, meaning I don't have to type out my whole talk. Spam detection, Akismet does AI spam detection. Fakes detection, kind of works, kind of doesn't anymore. Supporting special needs, I was at a talk earlier this morning on accessibility. All the stuff that needs to be done for accessibility, really important, vital stuff. Hugely expensive, especially if we do it centrally and try to make it work for everyone. Stuff that AI can help with, minimally, even the transcription, right? For the people who are hard of hearing, being able to see the transcription of my voice, life-changing. Automated grading, again, whole talk there. That works in tests. It's shown to be more consistent than human grading. Because human graders, well, you've all graded. You probably don't use the same standards with the first paper on the top of the pile and paper number 114 at the bottom of the pile. Your grading method is different. At least mine was, not because I wanted it to be, but because I got tired. Resource planning, learning design, user testing, identifying students at risk of failing, all of this is all being used as well. I mention these because the discussion, especially online, especially in our community, about AI over the last couple of years has focused exclusively on generative AI and why it's the evil. It's just one application, and mostly what people are talking about are misapplications of that one application, and I'll talk a bit about that. I'd love one day to just be able to debate a lot of the AI skeptics, and we'll just go through the issues one by one and just see where it lands. And I'm not paid by AI companies or anything, and I have zero stock in AI companies, and I'm an anti-capitalist, anti-corporate, non-shill, trust me. All right. What is artificial intelligence? All of that stuff works on the same basic principles. Now, I've left out a bunch of slides that talk about neural networks, input processing, connections, connection weights, plasticity of the network, biases and sensitivities of individual nodes. I've left all of that out. All of that is known. It's all simple, basic mathematics. It is, quite literally. And you see, in that you read those papers and you see that, what is it, the epsilon sign? They're just adding stuff up. And if they get really fancy, they'll multiply some stuff and then they'll add it up. That's it. That's all this is. AI is basic, simple mathematics. And it does basic, simple things. That's why it's so funny. You know, people talk about AI as if it could go away. It's not gonna go away, because now that people grasp how it works, anybody can create their own AI. If you have buckets of money, you can create really big, really powerful AI, but anybody can create AI. I could create it on my computer. We could sit down, I could write out the software, you could see, oh yeah, add this, add this. I have a few games. The completion game is a fun one. This is the one where you auto-complete, right? So, ham and eggs. Everybody says eggs. I did this with a Mexican audience the other day, and they did not come up with eggs. it's kind of fun. I did Justin.
Timberlake.
See, it's interesting, right? Justin Timberlake, Justin Bieber, Justin Trudeau, not so much anymore. All I got from Mexico was Justin Bieber, that was it. And one person went, what? I don't get anything. That's the neat thing, like it's completion, but it's not automatic, it's not one rule for completion, right? When you do completion, auto-completion, it depends on what you've already learned, what your background is, what your experiences are, right? Auto-completion is simply present a phenomenon to a neural network, depending on how the neurons in the network are connected. When you present a phenomenon, certain neurons will light up, the signal will come out the other end, and that signal depends on how those neurons were connected. And the way those neurons are connected, like I said, basic math, addition, multiplication. And so you get Justin Bieber, Justin Trudeau, or I don't know. It's funny because I've heard critics of AI say, really, you shouldn't make too much of it. It's nothing but completion, nothing but pattern recognition. Yeah, that's how the human brain works. Remember the repositioning of humans, right? We aren't these great cognitive things that are in black boxes that really you can't describe. We are pattern matchers. Our brain is a pattern matching machine. That's all it does. I know. Chomsky would disagree. Jerry Fodor would disagree. A bunch of others would disagree. But the evidence is overwhelming on the side of pattern matching. Educators know this. Sesame Street, which of these things don't belong? Pattern matching, right? What number is this? How do we recognize numbers? Right, and that's the highest reasoning, right? Mathematics, algebra, logic, well, here's the original image. It's normalized, sliced, diced, segmented. Here's our feature detection. In addition, right, we'll just x1, x2, etc. The model, which is the previously existing state of connections, and then pops the digit, we recognize this as a 3. That's how it works. And then later on, we recognize 3x3 equals 9. We recognize each of those symbols. And the interesting, what ChatGPT did is it allowed us to recognize bigger things. The famous paper, attention is all you need. It recognizes bigger things. It pays attention to more things. Now, deference to the video. I'm grossly oversimplifying it, but that's basically it. So far, so good? You can throw things at me if you disagree. It's okay. So, the paying attention to bigger things in our world of AI is known as context. That's what they call it. It's a stupid name. But it's context. There really isn't a good analogy in cognitive psychology for it. The whole pseudoscience of short-term memory, long-term memory processing, encoding, etc., doesn't really fit neatly into that because they made it up. But context is the stuff that you can put into the content that you're presenting to your neural network along with any specific request. So when one of the things they started to do almost immediately is create what are called system prompts. So you know how ChatGPT works, right? You type something in, a question, what is the capital of France? That's a prompt. Before ChatGPT ever sees your prompt, it sees the system prompt, because it can handle long questions. And the system prompt is a whole bunch of instructions for it to tell it how to behave when you ask your question. It's still only fancy autocomplete. That's what's really neat about this, right? When you have a large enough neural network, you can give it really complex input and it can give you really complex output. Still nothing more complicated than Justin Bieber. It's just all of this stuff in, all of this stuff out, but the mechanics are exactly the same. So we got system prompts. That's how, remember when it was Google's Gemini or Google's image generating or something gave us, I think it was Nazis Who Are Black or something. I'm not sure. It was something really inappropriate.
It was also Asians involved.
And also Asians, yeah. When it's well known that they tended not to be. But what they were doing, quite laudably, was trying to get a broader representation in their visual images. But it did that for all of them, despite the other context. So people made a big deal out of it. The US right hated it. That was system prompting, created that effect. More system prompting than the data that went in. The system prompting overruled the data that went in. Think about, and you need to think about how to understand what's happening here. And I want to reframe you again. Okay. All the training that you do with a large neural network, you remember how they say, oh, it's stealing all the content and putting it into the neural network. You've heard that, right? All of that training, okay, it's actually completely ignoring the content. This is what kills me, right? Doesn't matter what the content was. We kind of like to get good content because it'll be grammatically more accurate, but ChatGPT does not care what it says. All ChatGPT is interested in is word order. That's all it cares about. That's why we need the system prompts to give it stuff it actually does care about. But creating the network, all it cares about is word order. I'm still out of my frame. Hi again, world. I'm oversimplifying when I say all it cares about is word order. But I'm oversimplifying, but I'm not making a category mistake here. I'm not saying all it cares about is word order when it really cares about the meaning of the word. It does not care at all about the meanings of the word. Just word order can be interpreted in multiple ways, right? And caring about word order means, you know, processing it in different ways, subjecting it to different algorithms, different systems of recognition, right? But, you know, you feed it in War and Peace. It doesn't know that this was a book about the Napoleonic Wars. Doesn't know that. What it does know is that the word "and then" appeared as a sequence 485 times, and more significantly, many more times than the phrase "and but" occurred. So if you typed in "and" as a prompt, you would get "and then" as an output, not "and but," because nobody right's hand butt. Why would they? So that's why it's strange, I mean literally strange to me, to hear people say, ChatGPT copied all this content. It did not. It copied or it extracted data about the content while ignoring the content. That's why there's no copyright issue. And the rest of it will be political, right? It's very profitable for some people to say, well, there really is a copyright issue. But strictly speaking, it didn't copy the content. All right, moving on. Advances in artificial intelligence. RAG, MCP, A2A. How many of you have heard of these? Okay. First one is RAG. It's short for Resource Augmented Generation. So remember the context window, right? Has our prompt, has the system prompt. Well, we can actually make that really big. And so what people do is they take entire documents and they put them in that context window. You can test it out for yourself with ChatGPT. You upload a file, right? Or you can set up a shell application that accesses a database, right? Puts that in the prompt window before the system prompt, before the user prompt, and that becomes part of the context window. That's resource augmented generation. We are generating content just like before, but now it's being augmented by the resource. What's neat about resource augmented generation is that our AI now has a source of truth. It did not have a source of truth before that because we fed it War and Peace, but it didn't analyze War and Peace for the content. All it had was word order. It learned the grammar and the syntax, not the meaning, right? That's what it took from War and Peace. Now we're giving it meaning. Now we're giving it a set of facts. Now, how closely does it align to these facts? Pretty closely if they're good facts. Best evidence for that is how well ChatGPT and similar programs do automated software generation. Developers swear by it now. Pretty much everyone who writes software, and I mean everyone who writes software, uses ChatGPT or something more advanced. Because what happened is they used as their resource the manual for the software language. Whole bunch of facts about software. And then you ask it, how do I do such and such, or what is the meaning of such and such error, or please look at this code and find the bug. And I've done all of those. And it compares what you put in your prompt with the resource and comes out with an answer. Usually pretty good. My biggest problem with ChatGPT to write software isn't the accuracy, it's how much output it will give me. They cap it at a certain amount, about 1,200 words equivalent. At least that's my experience. If I paid them more, I might get more. Who knows? So far, so good? Interesting? Useful?
Yes.
Cool. Another one is called Model Context Protocol. I've given you enough information, you could probably figure this out for yourself. But I'll waste some time and tell you anyways. Oh, I keep walking on my, you know, there we go. Just turn the computer, change the frame. All right. So, Model Context Protocol, what we're going to do is give our AI system a way of putting more stuff into the context. The context, remember, is where the prompt goes, where the system prompt goes, where the documents in RAG go. Now, what we've got is the AI host, and we'll write what's called an MCP server, and connect it to a database. So what happens is, you have to tell the AI that this exists. That's actually the hard part. This will receive a request in a certain format from the AI. Now the AI knows what the format is. Why? Because we've given it the manual. We've actually described our MCP server in exquisite detail to the AI. So the AI knows how to ask a question of the server. The server connects to a data source. Files, websites, databases, travel agencies, you name it. Any online service you can think of. The data source returns the data, the server returns the response to the AI, the AI does whatever it wants to do with that. We have just connected ChatGPT to all of human knowledge. Well, all of human knowledge that's stored somewhere. Now, over the last 4 or 5 months, there's been a land rush in writing MCP servers. There's now, I don't know, I'd have to estimate 40,000 of them. So it's a bit of madness, right? But that's okay. I think personally, I think this is a transitory step, because why should you have to write a server when you have an application that can write servers? That doesn't make sense to me. So eventually we'll be to the point where all we have to do is expose all the information about the API to the AI, and we'll be able to connect. But right now the server does the middle work, because it's still a bit tricky. So yeah, AIs hallucinate. Of course they do. Humans hallucinate all the time. We dream pretty much every night. We make up stuff in our head. If somebody asks us where we were last night and then we don't want to admit where we were last night, we lie. And we lie confidently. If you asked me a question about AI and I was of a certain ethical persuasion, which I'm not, I would give you a response that sounded authoritative but was pure gibberish. Right? Lots of presenters do that. I won't. I'll just say I don't know, because lots of things I don't know. So that's what AI does. Why? Because it's the same kind of thing. Humans and AIs are the same kind of thing. Humans hallucinate. Why wouldn't you expect AIs to?
I kind of don't like the hallucination phrase, partly because it implies false experience. And the GPT doesn't have experiences in the sense that a human has experiences. What do you think about that?
That's that reframing I was just talking about, right? I wrote a paper once simply called Consciousness, where I explained this, my view on this, at more length. But what is an experience? Right. Well, it's, strictly speaking, it's the activation of a certain set of cells, depending on the experience, in the visual cortex or the auditory cortex, not the outer edges of it. We don't detect that, right? But in far enough so that the looped neurons can detect that and feed that back in. Does that make sense?
Well, I guess that's a bit more sort of below the surface than I was thinking. I was thinking more sort of phenomenologically.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not having an experience in that sense.
Well, what is an experience over and above what I just said, in my point? There is nothing.
Okay.
Seriously, think about it, right? It's by analogy, suppose you were asking, what is fire? And I said, fire is the plasma state of the oxidation of carbon atoms. And suppose you said, no, I didn't want the physical description. I want to know what a fire is.
Well, a fire
is the plasma state of the oxidization of carbon atoms. Nothing more than that. That's what, to me, in my explanation, that's what experience is. Now, I'm a reasonable person. I'm open to alternative stories, provided that they make sense. There is no alternative story. Right? People talk about phenomenology, which, you know, we can go into Husserl and all the rest of it. Good. And talk about the phenomenal experience, but that's still like asking, what is fire? Right? What is a phenomenal experience? It is the activation of neural cells in the visual cortex and a couple layers in. That's what it is, right? And you say, well, what about the experience of that? Those cells are connected to an additional layer that records the existence of those other neural activations. Because, you know, it's layer by layer by layer by layer. And some of these layers loop back. I forget the exact term, but it's a known design convolution, convoluted neural networks. I might be wrong on that, because I'm not good with proper names. But anyhow, that's the explanation. Okay, so we come back. Can a computer have a conscious experience? Well, right now, no. But that's only because we've got 50 billion, they've got 1 billion, right? They have the conscious experienceness, they have the conscious experience of something that is less than a worm. So, yeah, okay. But we don't deny that a worm could have conscious experience. Is that we don't think it's anything remotely like ours. And how could it be? Right? They're just working with so much less brain. Elephants, octopi, things like that, much more likely to, right? Still not working with the same brain material, but they're getting close. My cat, definitely. Oh geez, my cat does all of the stuff that somebody with conscious experience does. She knows when it's food time. She tries to deceive me and pretend that she's not paying attention. All the intentional states. She can't do a single word of vocabulary. Not an English word anyways. But, you know, so non-humans can have conscious experience. Non-living beings can have conscious experience. So we don't have that, you know. So we come back to, you don't like the vocabulary, cool. We can use a different vocabulary. We can go, as they say, eliminativist on that side. But you know, you don't like me going eliminativist with humans, so I figure I can use the same logic when I'm talking about machines. Damn it, intentional states. Intentional stance, right? We're taking an intentional stance because that's how we humans make sense of things that are really complex. We anthropomorphize all the time. Nobody complains when I say, you know, the weather wants to kill me when it's minus 40 out. The weather is not a sentient being, but nobody complains when I say that because everybody knows what I mean. So it's the same sort of argument. It's a good point, though, because it gets raised a ton, doesn't it? Absolutely. How am I doing on time?
We're at almost 5 after 3, so 10 more minutes.
10 more minutes? But and 80 more slides.
You're presenting again.
Yeah, I know.
So I don't
want to... Yeah, I'll be late for my own talk. Wouldn't be the first time. All right, I didn't mention A2A. A2A is agent-to-agent protocol. Some of those MCP servers can act as proxies on behalf of an AI. When they do that, it's called an agent. When an agent talks to another agent, they have their own protocol, agent-to-agent protocol. So these AIs, people talk about as they talk in the language of there's only one AI, when in fact there are dozens, dozens, hundreds, thousands, and they will talk to each other using A2A protocol. Like, it's really interesting. Maybe you've seen this. Oh, come on, why is my mouse not working? Touchscreen for the win, take that, Mac people. Oh, jeez.
Oh!
Yeah, that's enough. All generated by AI. From scratch. From a text-based description. As the keynote speaker said, we are moving from text-based AI into multimodal AI. Leo is a pretty good example of that. People haven't thought this through, this, certainly the AI critics. A few years from now, nobody's gonna care that AI read the entire corpus of human textual output. Nobody will care. All of these copyright suits will be moot because AIs will be out there, or their proxies will be out there with cameras like little Google Street View cars collecting experience. They'll be collecting images from the streets. They'll see what weather does. They'll look at animals. They'll go to zoos and observe behaviors. They will infer in the same way that humans infer, as David Hume would say, through the association of like events where one follows another, principles like cause and effect, principles like scientific explanation. They will come up with these on their own, the same way they were able to adduce the rules and strategies of games like chess and Go by seeing only examples of the games and never being told the rules. That's going to happen. It's in the process of happening. There's lots of stuff out there. It's funny because every time one comes on TV, my wife says, oh yeah, they're just trying to get your data. They are just trying to get your data. The little thing where you put your fingers on to measure your heartbeat, that's a system for determining what normal heartbeats look like. Of course it is. They charge you $90 for it. That's what kills me, plus a subscription probably. Ride with GPS, heat maps, where do people go cycling? We're giving AI's data. We're giving them non-text database data, right? But this data will eventually be a truth layer. Bad name, but I'll live with it. Right now we have the language layer, which is text generation or video generation. Next will be the truth layer, where it uses all of these inferences that it got from actual data in the real world to create better, more realistic responses to things. And what's interesting is it sees things literally, not just a euphemism. Photons go through the detectors and activate neural cells. It's seeing things. And it sees things we don't see. It sees things in ways that we can't see. It sees many, many more things. When humans see things, the first few layers of our visual cortex actually filter out most of what we see. They can do it too, but they'll filter it out in different ways because they're more adaptable. So they'll be able to come up with causal principles that we never even considered. That's a bit speculative, but the multimodal input is not speculative. It is happening. Sorry. So when we think about AI in education, we have to be thinking about more than advances in online instruction, more than adaptive learning, more than open content, more than automated assessment. I have a whole spiel, you got some of it earlier, where the whole concept of open educational resources is not going to make sense anymore. Because why would we need to create this content ahead of time in the hope that a teacher will reuse it to teach a class when we don't have classes and when we can create better content, more authoritative content, once we get all of this experience built in, automatically for each individual person at their point of need? Makes no sense, right? So all the discussions about licensing, which were terribly frustrating, won't matter anymore. What will really matter is access to data, obviously. And part of what I say in the context of this discussion is, if we want open learning, if we want open AI, not the company, but the concept, then we have to have open data and open content. Everybody in academia, and especially in the open education community, who are arguing against the use of content by AI, are arguing against open learning, because they're undermining the possibility of open AI, the concept, not the company. I don't know how to say it more plain than that. Right now, OpenAI, right now AI is the domain of the big evil corporations. And I'm saying that non-sarcastically. They're big, they're evil, they're corporations. They're literally not allowed to follow the principle, don't be evil. That goes against their fiduciary duty, right? But AI is mathematics. There can be open AI. With enough processing power, there can be big open AI. There's nothing complex about this. The only thing complex is, right now, amassing the resources. But if anything like Moore's Law holds, and it still kind of still holds, there are limits and we're seeing them, but it still kind of still holds, people like you and I can have our own individual AI system. But if we can't have open AI, we can't have our own individual AI system. We will always be paying an AI tax to Google, Microsoft, Meta, Anthropic, and the rest. So, I mean, I know they're well-intentioned. I know that they want to respect the rights of content creators, but they are undermining open education. And anyhow, education won't be about content creation anyways. We already know this, we're just having a hard time accepting this. But we know that. I think you can see the thread in this conference. You can see the thread in the CNIE conference that I just went to. Right? AI can do the professor's work of preparing the content, delivering the content, answering the questions that come up. They can't form a nice personal relationship with the student, not yet anyways. Some of the voice-based assistants seem pretty nice to talk to. Not kidding. The students can use AI and are using AI to create the content that they hand in for marking which is okay because the professor is using AI to grade that content. And then various other AI systems are analyzing all of these interactions and trying to make predictions about whether the student will pass or fail. And meanwhile, the company that might employ the student is ignoring this entire process and looking at their social media to see what knowledge they actually demonstrate on a day-to-day basis. And they're using the millions and hundreds of millions of bytes available on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, whatever. And people will contribute because that's how you get a job. In slogan form, the credential of the future will be a job offer. Assuming there's still jobs. So, okay. I know I'm almost out of time. How do we understand ourselves in this world? We are interactive. We're going to see this more and more important. We are interactive. The only way to compete at any level with machines is to have a society that is as smart as the machine, which means interacting with each other. And it also means interacting with the AI. You can look it up. There's a term out there already in wide use, human AI teaming, where humans work in collaboration with AIs to do whatever. Already exists. There's a paper I found a while back that promoted the concept of AI in the loop. Right? Everybody's so concerned, and we could talk about this for ages, about human in the loop. But really, we should be thinking about AI in the loop. And why? Because who is it is deciding what needs to be done? My comments about deontic AI notwithstanding. It's humans. And usually, the decisions about what needs to be done are the results of interactions with each other. Social processes, political processes. Bringing AI into that allows us to draw from it, right? So it's not about, can we control AI, right? As though it was some sort of something operating independently of ourselves. It's about how we can make use of AI to further the objectives we already have. And again, remember, we'll have AI on this. We'll have something as powerful as ChatGPT on this, and it'll cost us pennies to use. I know this is a mess. If you follow that presentation, you can see how I built that. Think about how we can use AI to do the kinds of things that we want to do. Now, for various reasons not discussed, there might not be institutions, but suppose there are. We would probably want to support staff diversity at the institution. Well, there's a whole process about how we do that. You look at the whole workflow from recruitment, connecting, enrolling, adapting, assessing strengths, engaging them, assisting them, metrics for employment, something that I can't see down there, recommending compensation. AI fits in. Now, the six lines here in this presentation are six lines of what I call critical literacies, the types of pattern matching we can use AI to augment our thinking. Totally different discussion. But it's basically syntax, semantics, pragmatics in the sense of use, pragmatics in the sense of context, cognition, that is induction, deduction, abduction, explanation, definition, and then change. Five or six basic types of patterns. Apply that metric to the different systems, and we have all of these mechanisms we can use AI to support staff diversity at the institution, and actual real staff diversity, not some rule and some set of principles that somebody's put up on a wall that's ignored by everybody from time on in. And I take that one personally because when I was in graduate school in the 1980s, they were talking about equity in hiring. And here we are in 2025, and they're still working on equity in hiring. They still haven't gotten it down yet. It just kills me, right? Do it right. Get real equity in hiring. Sorry. How do we understand learning? This again is another presentation. Most of the AI people are talking about personalized instruction, a ridiculous sham that you should not believe in. The critics of using AI to personalize instruction are exactly right. Not because AI is a flimflam, but because personalized instruction is a flimflam. Right? Do I have it here? Oh, I don't have it here. It is in this later slide. When we look at how people actually learn, they generally learn in the form of personal learning. It's based on what they're trying to do, what objective they're trying to meet, and then the learning is defined by that. So we start with the desired state, we practice, we get results, we get feedback, and the cycle goes. We're not trying to define some sort of ideal state of content full awareness. I'm done. When other people walk in, that's a sure sign. So, I wish. So, yeah, you get the idea, right? Long story short, pull together all this information about communities and think about it not as magical cognition, but as networks of interacting people, forming a society that creates intelligence in the same way that a human brain does and ChatGPT does. We reframe our understanding of ourselves that way, we have some kind of way of looking at the future. That's all I got. The next talk that I'm doing is the mechanics, the stuff that I've built, trying to lead us to do that. Thank you, everyone. Oh, I wonder when it stopped.
Michael and I are training. Michael's coming down here in the...
Okay, am I in this same room?
You're in the same room.
Oh, that's really handy.
So that is handy.